From Hwasun Village on Jeju Island, this is The Koreaphile, a weekly podcast about music, culture, and society from all around the peninsula. I'm Andre Goulet. On this episode, Ben Spencer, exit interview. I met Ben at Epic Teacher Training in August of last year. We did a 10-day training in Jeonju City, North Jeolla Province, with 140 teachers from Daegu, Busan, and all of the Jeju hires. At the last day of training, we found out where we would be teaching. Ben got placed on Chuja Island. Chuja Island is 2 hours northwest of Jeju, but an hour south of the south coast of South Jeolla Province. Its population of 2,000, it's been shrinking rapidly over the last 10 years, and basically it's the biggest hardship post of any placement for public school teachers in Korea. I spoke with him in October about how his experience had been thus far at that time, and when I found out he was leaving, I wanted to find out how the last 4 months went.
Well, I came to Korea with some specifically defined financial goals, which I've reached, and having reached them, my girlfriend persuaded me to come home. She said, you know, you've done it, you don't need to stay any longer, you know, why don't you come home? And my only answer to that was, I did want to come home, the only reservation I had was that I wanted to make more money, which at Chuja is a great place to make money. You don't spend any. I weighed up the opportunity costs and sort of thought that, you know, the money that I earned staying probably wasn't worth the damage that I would do to my relationship if I didn't go home.
That's true, actually, because for someone earning on a high grade at, let's say, 2.4 a month, with debts and everything else, you're actually not clearing that much money. So how was it worth it to stay the last 6 months?
It's actually been incredibly lucrative. I managed to live on about 500,000 won a month, and the rest of my earnings I just plowed back into my debts, and I got it paid off really quickly. Yeah, it was good in that sense.
So, but the main draw to get you out of there was your relationship.
Well, yeah, and it wasn't likely that they were going to transfer me. I mean, you know, the Office of Education wasn't going to transfer me to another school. Once they had someone on the island and they didn't have to look elsewhere to find someone to go there, I think that they were happy to let me, you know, sit out there and stay, which I understand, it's fine. But, it wasn't likely that I was going to find another school in Jeju, so, or in anywhere else in Korea. So, yeah, I wasn't really looking forward to that prospect.
So let's talk about Chuja.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I am interested in the place.
I want to read excerpts from an article from the Jeju Weekly, and it's entitled, "And You Thought Jeju Was Remote." The subtitle is, "Chuja Island Boasts Hardy Inhabitants, Spectacular Nature."
And that's true. Although I have to say that the nature is largely artificial. The hardy inhabitants denuded the island of trees around about in the 1950s. They ran out of trees. They used it all for fuel. It would have been interesting on the day where they chopped down the last tree. I mean, what were they going to do then? There was a movement in the 1970s called the... I wish I could remember the name of it. It was a Korea-wide thing. It was a nation-building movement called the New Village Movement.
Mm-hmm. Same old movement.
Right. And the program that they pursued in Chuja was planting pine plantations. So when you go out there, all of the trees are about, you know... 30 years old or something like that. Yeah, they're new, fresh.
Okay.
What else you got for me there?
So fishing dominates the life of most people there.
Yes. Right. Every day you go out. Similar to Jeju, whenever you go down to the beach of an evening, you can see a lot of the squid fishing boats and the lights. The cool thing about Chuja is they do it a lot closer to shore. perhaps because the water is deeper, closer to shore there. And so you can actually see the squid pots being pulled out of the water as the boats pass. And yeah, I would say that 95% of people on the island work in the fishing industry. There's a bunch of, I think I mentioned this in the last interview, there was a bunch of fishermen from Indonesia and the Philippines there. And I would have been interested to learn more about the way that they live there, because the impression that I got from the few times that I spoke to them, like, they were living on board ship. They might not see land for, you know, long periods of time. And when they are living on the island, they live in a dormitory. And it's tough to get them in a situation where they're not in a group overseen by their Korean sort of bosses. So they're a bit reluctant to speak to me, I think. I don't know. It'd be interesting to find out what sort of conditions they live in. Mm. But there's plenty of Korean fishermen out there, plenty of Chuja families engaged in fishing.
This is a reading from the article.
Mm.
The self-described paradise for fishing is home to about 3,000 Chuja people.
Mm-hmm.
Of the working adults, 80% are employed in fishing, according to government statistics.
Right.
The islands are ringed with halos of squid boats at night and fishing hotspots along the coast teem with henya during the day.
That's true. There's a town called Mukri, and I used to pass through it on the way to one of the schools that I worked at each day, or, you know, 3 days a week. And in the morning you would see the hanyo going down to the shore, and in the evenings in the afternoons you'd see them coming back out again. And a few of my students, their grandmothers were hanyo. Actually, there's a man who received a national treasure award for being one of the few male hanyo in Korea, and he lives on Chuja. So there's plenty of older people engaged in freediving on Chuja, but very few younger people. I mean, all in all, there's very few young people on Chuja, but the younger people aren't, you know, the same everywhere in Korea. They don't tend to get into it.
So, despite the fact that seafood and sea products are essentially the only natural export of Chuja, the island's remarkably self-sufficient and even possesses its own elementary, middle, and high schools. So, can you describe your students for me?
I should note, the article might be a little bit out of date. The population is only 2,000 currently, and there's no high school. One of the things that a lot of people on the island are annoyed about is that the high school closed down. The Office of Education saw no need to fund it anymore. So that's been closed down. There's only an elementary school and a middle school. Most of my students, actually a good chunk of them, come from families who have been posted there. Like, one or other of the parents are working on the island. And they're children who, like, you know, like a council worker or a police officer or a teacher, their kids are at the school. The rest of the students, obviously, are the children of fishermen.
So is that clear in your teaching? Do you notice that?
No, actually, it's something that I had to sort of investigate to find out. Maybe I'm not that perceptive. But, yeah, it came out when I got to know them a bit better. The kids of professionals on the island tend to have a better level of English than the kids who live on the island all the time. So I suppose, yeah, in retrospect you could see it, but at the time I didn't notice it.
So how about the self-sufficiency aspect? What do you notice?
I think there are some market gardens, well, not market gardens, but private gardens on the island where people are growing vegetables, but not perhaps to the same degree that there is here on Jeju.
Are they more private? Like homegrown?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, it'll be, instead of having a backyard, you know, in behind the stone wall, there'll be like a cabbage patch or where they're growing, you know, like onions or something like that. But I think the self-sufficiency thing, that's a canard. Like, it's not really true.
Okay.
Without trade, the place would die. Mm-hmm. And up until the 1980s, when they built a seawater purification system, they were importing their water. So their drinking water came in by naval ship. they weren't, you know, and they were using a couple of wells and a couple of tanks to store rainwater, but yeah, they would have run out of potable water if it weren't for the Navy. Mm. So the idea that they're self-sufficient, I don't agree. I don't think it's true.
Sangchuja, which is one of the islands, is home to two shrines commemorating a pair of century-old figures,
mm-hmm.
General Choi Young and a teacher known only as Park. Additionally, Sangchuja is home to a recently constructed lighthouse situated atop a hill,
mm.
providing spectacular views of the sea. Did you go up there?
Yeah, I went up there. It's a great view from the top. Yeah, I mean, you can see the whole island.
Yeah. So is it a view of ourselves? Like,
yeah, I mean, you can see Chuja, all of Chuja. You can see Jeju. You can look down and see, on a clear day, you can see Jeju. And it's really beautiful from the top there.
But is it really, you know, a nation unto itself? Like, is it just itself? Is it just Chuja?
Perhaps in the past, maybe in the past, but these days, so many of the local families have left, and so many new concerns have moved in, mm. that it's hard to like justify that.
What kind of new concerns?
Well, the government's got a lot more involved there. Like, almost none of the administration is carried out by local people. It's all done by people who have been sent out there from Jeju, and so yeah. It's probably in a state of transition at the moment. I find it hard to believe that in 10 years or 20 years, within a generation anyway, whether Chuja will be anything more than sort of like a place for fishing fleets to take port and for the military to, you know, run a radar base. It's interesting, though, that you brought up the shrines, because those are actually really interesting characters, although I've forgotten their names. What's the name of the general?
Well, his name is General Choi Young.
Choi Young, yeah, he was sent to Jeju by the Joseon Dynasty, early in the Joseon Dynasty, to consolidate their rule here, and he got stopped by a storm on the way to Jeju. He got waylaid, and
that's how he ended up on Chuja.
That's how he ended up on Chuja, and while he was there, he noticed he took an interest in the fishing techniques they were using, and he thought that they were inefficient, so he introduced like a new net, a new form of fishing, and that's why the shrine's there, to commemorate like imparting this knowledge to them. And the other guy, the teacher Park, was an exile a lot later, towards the end of the Joseon Dynasty, and he ended up there. He was a Buddhist teacher, and he established the first school on the island. So in the very loose sense, I'm sort of standing in that tradition.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Speaks of the humble sense of isolation. Because it's isolated as fuck.
Yeah, it is really isolated.
But I'm wondering how that affects an individual being there. And how do you perceive that?
Mm. I've given this some thought in the last week or so, because I was trying to like articulate what I'd learned from my time in Chuja, coming away from it now. I haven't learned that much. I wish that I had some sort of spiritual awakening, but I spent far too much time on the internet. God damn it. Perhaps if I had spent more time like in rocky grottos up in the cliffs or something like that, maybe I would have come to some sort of realization about myself and the world, but I didn't. But I did go for walks occasionally around the cliffs and just recently, last week, I thought I should really go and do something. So I went up to Dondesan, which is the highest peak, 164 meters on Chuja, and took in the misty blue. You know, it's real pretty. and you know, you can point one way and say, you know, there's nothing until you get to China that way, and there's nothing until you get to Japan the other way, and you know, that's kind of cool. But apart from those apart from those sort of banal, insights, I didn't have anything interesting. Yeah, nothing profound.
So life on Chuja is changing rapidly. 20 years ago, the population was 7,000 people.
Yeah, right.
20 years ago, this is 95.
Yeah.
That's like nothing.
That's nothing. Actually, from that period, for the following 10 years, from 1995 to about 2005, Chuju was doing really well. Its population was dropping like a rock, but it was making a bucket of money because there was a major Jeju fishing fleet based there, and it was people were living there. You know, people, important people in that fleet were living on the island, and they were investing in businesses and opening up restaurants and, you know, Narabong, Jojubang, and the Ole Trail opened up. So there was a lot of tourists going there, and the local people were making a lot of money, even as they were shifting out to, you know, because they could. But probably about 7 or 8 years ago, that fishing fleet relocated to Jeju, and all of the new buildings that are on Chuju are from that period, and they're falling into decay. It's really sad. So a couple of those people are still there. We went to a chicken restaurant fairly regularly, and the proprietor of the chicken restaurant had, you know, this was their side business. Their main focus was on fishing. And their daughter was studying at like Stanford in the US on scholarship, but, you know, like all of her expenses paid by her parents and stuff like that. Like, you know, there's people on the move in Chuju going places, but then there's a lot of people, like, you know, left high and dry by this, you know, exodus of people and capital, you know.
So for Chuju as a part of the nation and trying to figure out how to carry on as part of Korea, in response to that negative population growth and a leveling off of the tourists, Chuju government has started to promote festivals. And they've, back in 2008 anyways, they were inviting Korean and international travelers to the unique islands. 2008 was Visit Chuju Island Year, and in that year they saw their tourist population double. So, in this article it says, whether or not Chuju becomes Korea's next hot tourist destination, its people and cultures will persist. The islands have been populated for hundreds of years without the aid of national tourism campaigns. And such self-sufficient culture, utterly dependent on the moody sea for its livelihood, learns to endure and make the best of what it has. What did you see in terms of endurement?
7 years on, I'm not so optimistic.
Really?
No, really. I think that, like, it will become, like I said, in a generation, it'll be a place of, like, it'll be important for strategic reasons. It's stuck in the middle of the Jeju Strait, and there is a naval base there, when, you know, like a radar base. And there is, you know, still opportunities for making money fishing. But I can't see, like, the generation of kids that I taught, they're not staying on Chuju. They're all leaving. They all have aspirations elsewhere. So it's going to have to be staffed by people. You know, it'll be an administrative post, that nothing more.
That's how you see the future of the island?
I'm afraid so. Yeah, as a tourist destination, to a certain degree, I mean, there are plenty of people who go there walking and fishing. But on a day-to-day basis, my prediction is that it will be a, you know, sort of like a backwards posting for, like, minor officials and people who've had affairs and, you know, can't really progress in their careers and stuff like that. The teachers who work there, I should excuse them from that statement. Yeah, but they are there because of the incentives that the Office of Education extends to them for working in a, like, a remote post. And they're all looking at, like, a significant pay rise and a jump up the ranks. So they're doing it for their careers. Nobody's doing it for the love of Chuju. Everybody that all the professionals that I met there were either there on their military service or because they got posted there because for whatever reason, either that they were offered some sort of incentive or it was a punishment post.
So in terms of this concept of hardship post.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Most people are put there for nation. And they're put there for concepts of patriotism.
Yeah.
And things like that. And for you, this was not the case. So how did you cope with a lack of patriotism? Or just a... anything like that. In terms of how you woke up every morning. How did you work with it? You were there for 6 months.
I saw it as a chance to you know, work on projects that were dear to my heart. Like, I was working on a book. Not that it's finished, but I got a substantial amount of work done. And as a chance to catch up on my education, I did some online courses. I really tried to treat it like a holiday from reality. You know what I mean? Like, where I could take a bubble of time and just, like, I didn't have to pay rent. You know, like, my expenses were low. I could save a lot of money. You know, that's something that you can't do when you're living in the city. And I, you know, like, when you're hanging out with friends and stuff like that, like, of course you want to go out. And if it's convenient to do it, you got to do it. You know what I mean? Because, you know, like, life is short. So I couldn't see myself saving the sort of money that I did anywhere else. And I really saw it in those terms as a chance to achieve, like, some goals that I wouldn't have... That would have been so much harder, taken so much more willpower to achieve if I had been living in society.
So what's your ultimate judgment on your 6 months here? How do you feel about it?
Really good.
Yeah?
Yeah, no, I'm really happy with it. I feel a little bit strange. When I first came in and met you guys today, I was... like, it took me a little bit to get into a conversation, which was a little bit embarrassing, but I'm doing okay now. And, you know, like, it's like riding a bike, yeah, the skills will come back. And definitely I was lonely from time to time, but you know, like, I'm at the end now. I don't have to deal with that. So I feel now that those present concerns are gone, like the loneliness and the boredom, I look back on it and I think, yeah, I had a rewarding time. Like, I achieved some things that I wanted to do, and it wasn't awful. And Chuju is a beautiful place, you know what I mean? Like, I was blessed to be able to, you know, every day wake up to, like, a serene ocean. It wasn't always serene, but definitely, you know, it had a character to it. I got into that, and, you know, it wasn't about the company I was keeping. It was more about, you know, me. It was about me. And the environment that I was in.
So what's next for Ben Spencer?
Well, I'm heading to Ireland. My girlfriend lives in Ireland. I'm going to move to Belfast, and in Northern Ireland. And I am aiming to get work in the media somewhere. But in the short term, that's something I'm going to have to work on in the short term. I'm going to get a temp job. Find a house, buy a car, you know, set myself up.
Your partner has a house.
She lives with her parents currently.
Okay.
Yeah, so we just put down a deposit on a rental. Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it's gonna be good. It's gonna be okay.
It's gonna be a big departure from your Chuja life. Are you ready?
Yes. Yes, I can safely say that I'm ready.
That's the Creophile for this week. Thanks to Ben Spencer. You can find the Creophile on iTunes, like us on Facebook, and tune in next week for a conversation with urban exploration expert John Dunbar. We'll also be talking about punk rock and the cults of Korea. If you like this show, recommend it. From Hwasun Village on Jeju Island, I'm Andre Goulet.